Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the first segment of our show, we'll hear from Heather McCain from Citizens for Accessible Neighborhoods. So tell me a little bit about Citizens for Accessible Neighborhoods.
Citizens for Accessible Neighborhoods is a nonprofit organization based in Vancouver, but we've had provincial projects throughout BC. And we try to support full inclusion within communication through multiple platforms, education, promotion, advocacy. It started by myself, who is a person with a disability. I started it because at the time I lived about an hour outside of Vancouver and was using a power wheelchair and could not use the transit system, the buses, because drivers were giving misinformation about the ramps not operating. And where I lived, a bus came once an hour. So therefore, if I missed a bus, the schedule for my day was pretty much shot. And so I started the organization in order to advocate for better access for people with disabilities, as well as to educate the bus drivers and the transit authority about the importance of accessibility for people with disabilities and how it's not a choice, it is a need, and it is a need on a daily basis. Fortunately, we were successful, and the accessibility for the transit system improved quite a bit. All buses now have ramps that can be done manually as well as automatically. So if the mechanism is not operating properly, the drivers can manually do the ramps. And so that was our first success. And from there, we heard from a lot of other people with disabilities about issues of access. People wanted to know more about adaptive sports and recreation and what was in their communities. And we started a database for BC, where we list adaptive sport and recreation programs. We also started to teach disability awareness training and started a website where we can have word of mouth section, which is information about anything pertaining to people with disabilities and those within their support system, whether it's transportation or government grants, accessibility. As well, we list our successes on the website so people are aware of the work that we do.
So, in terms of those successes, which one stands out the most for you?
That's a tough question. I think because we formed based on the inaccessibility of the transit system, our 8-year relationship with the transit authority, which is TransLink here, definitely is one of pride for me. And I've seen our transit system improve in accessibility, as well as the staff at TransLink learn more about what disabilities are, how the transit system needs to be accessible and really needs to be accessible now, and working with them in a constructive way to ensure that they are aware of what accessibility is, and what their role in that is, and they take accessibility very seriously. And so I would have to say that working with TransLink in an ongoing basis is definitely one of the proudest accomplishments.
So, in your time with CAN, has there been any set of challenges that's presented itself?
I think the biggest challenge is getting the conversation started, getting people to talk about what disabilities are, people within our community, not making disability seem like some foreign thing. People are well-intentioned, but they are nervous to talk about people with disabilities, accessibility issues, inclusion, because they don't know if they have the right vocabulary. They don't know if what they're thinking is something that nobody else is thinking. There's a lot of nervousness around talking about disability. And it comes from a well-intentioned place, but unfortunately what it does is it shuts down dialogue. And so I think opening up that dialogue is definitely a huge challenge. But then once we are able to open up that challenge, it's a great feeling to know that that conversation will continue from there.
So do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
Yes, we've worked with many organizations. We've had ongoing relationships with TransLink, with SPARC, which is the Social Planning and Research Council of BC. We've done projects for the Rick Hansen Foundation, Canadian Centre of Disability Studies. We've done projects with YVR, which is our airport here in Vancouver, City of Vancouver and City of Burnaby. That's, I think, one of the strengths of Citizens for Accessible Neighbourhoods is that we are a small grassroots organization, but we have partnered and worked with a lot of great organizations. We had a long ongoing relationship with BC Disability Sports and continue to support adaptive sports here with any of the organizations that provide adaption to sports.
So once your organization does its work, how does the community typically respond to the changes and upgrades?
Can you repeat that, please?
So, how does the community typically respond to the work of your organization?
The disability community? We have a lot of support within the disability community. And as a community, just in general, we have had a lot of great support. And people respond positively. I think our organization is known for being productive and being very positive oriented, being goal oriented. And so our work is very much supported and appreciated. And personally, I've been awarded several awards, City of Vancouver, BC Disability Sports, and so it's great. Oh, and the BC Paraplegic Association. So it's great to know that the work that we're doing is not just affecting one project or one organization, but that it's spreading further and really getting out there in the community.
So if you could send any one message about the need for accessibility in any community, what would you say?
I think accessibility is interesting in that it's not something you can truly understand until you have experienced it yourself. And I think the message that I would send is that accessibility is vital to inclusion, to ensure that people with disabilities are able to access their community in the same way that those without disabilities do. And that accessibility is not something that can be put off. It is something that we have to look at right now, particularly with our aging population.
So, what are the next steps for Citizens for Accessible Neighborhoods?
Well, we continue to work with the Justice Institute, for example, on taxi training, so ensuring that the taxi drivers get appropriate training for anything from how to communicate to people with disabilities, to ensuring that they know how to properly lock down mobility devices. Here in Vancouver, TransLink, our transit authority, is looking at moving away from Handy Dart and putting more passengers into taxis. So we see this as an extremely important issue right now. We continue to do disability awareness seminars and presentations, and I think we just continue to be open to any opportunities that present themselves to us.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Grassroots action. That's what it's all about, folks. Bring people together to make real progress. If a group or an individual feels pressured to make change, odds are they're going to do what they're legally required to do. But real change, substantive change, comes from recognizing the rights and the needs of others and saying, how can I be that someone? What can I do to support this person who has just as much right to access as I do? When a person believes in the ideals and the potentials of a person with a disability, if they recognize that this is someone who has a gift to contribute to society, odds are they're going to work that much harder just to bring meaningful change. By getting people together, hearing their stories, hearing what they really need and what's really important to them, you get deeper insight, which is what we could all use once in a while. We could all take a moment to ask ourselves, what are my thoughts on equality? Do I believe that every person has the potential to achieve? And if the answer is yes, then you've got to ask, how can I support individuals with disabilities? How can I be a positive influence on them? What can I do within the community to improve quality of life for them? HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
WalkSafe is a free service provided for all students, faculty, employees, and visitors at the University of Windsor. It is a student staff volunteer program designed to help people get to their vehicle, home, apartment, or residence on or off campus at night. WalkSafe was designed to provide additional safety to the university community in cooperation with campus community police. All you need to do is dial 0 from any university phone and ask for WalkSafe or extension 3504. Walk safe, not alone.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Heather McCain from Citizens for Accessible Neighborhoods. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Nicole Daigneault. She'll be telling us about new advancements for her yoga program. So tell me a little bit about the latest happenings with your yoga program.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you always for helping to get the word out. And I'm hoping that the community continues to be as enthusiastic and supportive and creative with me as we get these classes going. From the get-go, they have really unfolded in a nice, natural way. People have heard about the classes. We start adding on more classes, and it's just happened sort of by word of mouth and everybody helping to get this word out. So thank you on your part. And, just really letting people know that I am back from having spent a week in Toronto this August, where I learned what's called the Sonia Sumar method of teaching yoga to infants and children with special needs. So I am excited to come back to Windsor with that knowledge and extend my teachings that have been up to this point. I've been teaching teens and adults with special needs, and I have always thought that getting to the to people younger and younger helps to just, you know, prevent certain things from setting in, different physical patterns that maybe we want to establish at the earliest stage in life possible. So I'm very excited to begin to work with infants and children. So that's where I'm at right now at this point in things.
So how does the practice of yoga with infants and children with special needs differ from that of working with a teen with a condition?
Okay, well, that's a very good question. And, you know, to be honest, I mean, my own son, I wouldn't consider him a boy with special needs. However, when he was born, he had a very outturned right foot and leg. And from the get-go, and he's 6 years old now, but from the get-go, just from my own massage and yoga expertise, I massaged and stretched and nurtured him. And as he began crawling, I would help to encourage that foot and knee to turn in the right way and the hip to start doing the right thing as he learned to stand. So for sure, there isn't so much a difference between a normally growing child versus maybe a child with special needs. However, there are certain contraindications. There are certain techniques that I've learned from my time in Toronto that will serve infants and small children with special needs, just in that it's a very specialized area. Really looking at a child, seeing how it's developing, noticing those imbalances, very, very tight, for example, like an elbow and a hand that are pulled back, maybe in a child with cerebral palsy, helping those limbs to maintain a bit of their extension, a little bit of their elasticity, as opposed to just letting that limb get more and more stiff and restricted. So, you know, obviously there's just a number of other issues that these children might be dealing with. They've had more surgeries, perhaps. The concentration, the breathing, noses get a little more stuffed up, tongues might be a little bit bigger in a mouth. For example, with Down syndrome children, often the tongue's a bit bigger. It prevents from, you know, proper nostril breathing. So some of these techniques that Sonia Sumar from 1970, working with her own child with Down syndrome, she's developed these over all these years. And I just feel so blessed that I've been able to learn from a little bit of her expertise and weave it into my own years of expertise and try to hopefully help some of the smaller little ones before perhaps maybe some poor breathing patterns develop or muscular and other types of patterns that we could maybe help to support. So it's like I said, it's not that much different than a regularly. I might do the exact same type of things with a regularly developing child, but we take a few special procedures with the special needs children and just work on it maybe a little more slowly, a little bit more repetitively, and just really, you know, take our time. So I hope that answers it.
So what are some of the potential benefits long-term of this process?
Well, all the same benefits of anybody who knows what yoga's all about. Better concentration, better breathing, less anxiety, less stress, better sleeps at night, better posture. Everything is improved with yoga practice. Getting those deeper breaths in, learning to use our diaphragm, it calms the nervous system completely. So whether you have special needs or not, everybody has a special need, right, Cam? I mean, I've been teaching yoga for over 15 years now, and everybody has something that they need to work on. So the yoga practice in general helps us all to maintain a certain physical balance and a mental balance. Those deeper breaths, the breath awareness, they help us to stay calmer and to deal with life stresses a little bit. One of my students, I think I've talked about her before, she's a young woman with cerebral palsy. she's indicated to me that her stress about the potential of an upcoming attack is very overwhelming for her. Just the stress in anticipating a possible seizure, for example. And she's learned to control that anxiety about just the fear of it coming with her breathing focus, with her mental counting and better, deeper, stronger breaths. So it helps all of us. We could spend a whole day talking about the benefits of yoga.
So what are the next steps for the program?
Well, the next steps is for me to get back into my full schedule. I've been away all August, and I look forward to continuing on. I'll see my 11:15 a.m. group. Up to this point, it's been teens and women with Down syndrome. However, we've always said we would welcome anyone, man, woman, any disability or no disability, come and join us. We're having a really good time. That's at 11:15 on Saturday mornings here in the Jackson Park Health Center. And I saw my group at Harmony in Action for the first time this Friday for a month. We had a ball, and Harmony in Action is very open to having anybody come in, even if they're not part of the day program. You can call Harmony in Action and see if your child or ward can participate in the group, even if they're not someone who's in their regular daycare program. And also, as I mentioned at the top of your show, I'd like to start developing more and more of these classes, hopefully with the younger and younger ones. And the spaces that I have available to me are, of course, my office here at the Jackson Park Health Center. And also, and I'm very excited about this, the University of Windsor is strongly behind the initiative to get more and more yoga for people with special needs going on that campus. So I've begun to put out the word. I know I have other associates who've begun to put out the word to different maybe groups who'd like to organize a day trip with their residents to come to the University of Windsor for an hour, do some yoga, have a little excursion. Those are all the types of things that we have for a potential. But I am just getting back to town. I've been away, and these things will develop over the next weeks and months, I'm sure. But I really hope that your listeners, if they'd like to begin a group, if they'd like to join into a group, if they'd like to work with me privately or in their facility, I hope they go to the website, www.cocoyoga.com or .ca, and contact me, and we can create things and have a really good time developing these things just in their own natural time.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Nicole touched on what I consider one of the most important points in all of disability life: stress. The fear of what could be, the fear of taking a chance, being a part of the community, doing something new. If you're ruled by stress, you come to a place where you stop living, really. And you start to see, if I do this, my disability could act up. It's not always going to be the case. Fact of the matter is, a person should just live with their strengths, do the best they can to deal with any situation as it comes up. Inventing roadblocks for oneself doesn't help any situation. It only adds to this stress, which any competent medical professional would tell you is very bad on the overall health of a person. It's techniques like yoga, like exercise, athletic programs, that can really help to reduce this stress and make things better for a person with a disability. Because if they believe in their strength and they recognize their potential to create, to achieve, then they're just more well-rounded as a person. But to be ruled by fears and stresses, you start to see problems as bigger than they are. Or worse still, you start to see problems that aren't even an issue. And that can seriously impact a person's overall health. Their mental well-being, it's one of the first things to be affected. But for a person with a disability, yes, there can be medical concerns. There can be factors that have to be considered. Just do the best you can with them. No one can control everything about every situation. But if you try to take steps to keep yourself calm, to keep yourself focused, odds are you'll stand a better chance when a problem does come up. I really enjoy chatting with Nicole about her yoga program, because it's doing something so unique. But the fact that she's starting at a younger age for infants and children with disabilities, this can have an incredible long-term effect. If they learn these techniques at a young age, and they start to grow up with better posture, better breathing, their overall health will be in better shape. And should medical science arrive at a place where a new treatment or a new possibility opens up for them, if they've learned these techniques of breathing and posture, stress management, odds are they'll be far better equipped to take the chance on getting that improvement. But yoga, like anything in disability life, it's a matter of maintenance. You can't just do it once and say, there, I've learned this technique, I'm cured. Fact of the matter is, it's maintenance, it's upkeep, and a person must be willing to give something a long-term, sustained try. Same is true with any disability achievement. They can't just say, one thing didn't work, so everything and everyone must, by definition, be against me. The odds must always be stacked against me. For a person to actually get out there and try to develop their own strength, to find good rhythms, just finding what works for them. Not every disability treatment or opportunity is right for everyone, but if you find the things that matter to you, that work for you, odds are you'll be in a far better position to try something new, to say, I found strength in this area of my life, and I'm going to try to stretch that even further. A person with a disability must never limit themselves. They must never say that because one thing failed to improve things for me, everything else will. They must always recognize there is hope. And if you live with hope every day, one day it will be justified. It's not an easy thing, but it's a matter of just doing the best you can to be there for yourself and for those around you day by day. And as you go forward, do the things that can help you control those fears, those anxieties. So a person might fail at something. So they might have an attack. They might not. But living ruled by that fear does nothing for anyone. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.